Okay, I'm looking forward to this one tonight. 3 hours of open lines, lots to cover with you as well. First of all, it's always good to say thank you to you on a Friday night. Those of you listening on your favorite radio stations around North America. As a matter of fact, I did a promo for a radio station yesterday that is also now beaming us into Cuba. So coast to coast is being heard down there too. So that's kind of fascinating. So thank you to all of you listening on your favorite radio stations. We love you. Thank you to Streamlink members. Appreciate you being longtime supporters of Coast to Coast, and also those of you who are called the Coast Riders who do the Streamlink chat. XM satellite listeners, especially all you truck drivers out there, keep us rolling. And the various chat rooms as well, all around the country. The Fantastic Forum Pirates, headed up by Spike Mike. The NighthawkZone.com folks, headed up by Bad Boy. And coming up on your 6 month anniversary with tremendous growth. Very proud of you people. The Imaginative Worlds, you people, good for you. And I'm glad you are who you are. Yahoo chat rooms, the Sorcery IRC, the National Radio Club. They're all over the place, growing and growing, keeping Coast to Coast the number one rated late night talk show in the country. We're gaining more affiliates. Our numbers have never been higher. Now that Art is coming back on weekends beginning tomorrow, it's just going to propel us into super space. We may never come back down to planet Earth after all of this. By the way, some of you have sent me emails asking whenever I run that tape again of the car accident, the very hilarious car accident, just to kind of let you know, because you want to tape it. Just want to let you know we will do that at the end of the program tonight. We did not do it last week. It was inappropriate to do so, obviously. But for those of you, I will be running it at the end of this program tonight. So thanks to all of you. So yesterday I went to dinner with our producer Tom, and of course he had me by because Tom normally has a couple dollars in his pocket, no more. And we went to a Chinese restaurant, a well-known Chinese restaurant. I shall not tell you the name of it for fear that we will increase their business by tenfold, and that is not my intent here. It was a nice place. And at the end they gave us fortune cookies. I have always opened up my fortune cookies after a Chinese meal. Very rarely, and I got to tell you, do I eat them because I just generally don't like how they taste. But I always read the fortunes. And I got to tell you, we were talking about just the origin of fortune cookies. There's a little blip on the coasttocoastam.com website. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about it and then tell you why we're opening up a special hotline. Giving credit, they say, to the Chinese, most of us have never considered an American origin to fortune cookies. These are crispy. I'm going to open one up, by the way, tonight. Bow-shaped sugar cookies served in restaurants as the finale of a Chinese meal. Now, while the Chinese have no tradition of dessert, one competing legend of the fortune cookie suggests it was introduced in the Japanese tea garden in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park, and the idea pirated by a local Chinese restaurateur. A Japanese-American heritage is claimed by others, contending that the cookie is a descendant of a flat, round rice cracker called sembet. The Chinese believe the fortune cookie is a modern Chinese-American interpretation of the moon cake. Legend has it that the moon cakes were used in the 14th century as a means of critical communication. In their efforts to fight off the Mongols, Chinese soldiers disguised as monks apparently communicated strategies by stuffing messages into moon cakes. The concept of message-stuffed pastry has supposedly endured through the ages. And perhaps the most plausible story dates back to 1918 when here in Los Angeles, David Jung, founder of the Hong Kong Noodle Company, invented the fortune cookie as a sweet treat and encouraging word for unemployed men who gathered on the street. Some claim the cookie was more likely invented as a gimmick for his noodle business than as an icon of social concern. Revolutionizing the process of forming fortune cookies, initially performed awkwardly with chopsticks, Edward Louie invented a folding machine for his Lotus Fortune Cookie Company, which is still in existence today in San Francisco. Now mass-produced and widely distributed, the fortune cookie is exported to China and Hong Kong with fortunes written in English. most popular in the United States, the Cookies continued to lift spirits with promises of great success, love and harmony, fame and good fortune. I shall now live on this show open up my fortune cookie and read it to all of you. Here it goes. I shall now pull it out. I feel like Johnny Carson. Practice is the best of all instructors, and of course, whatever that means, and then lottery numbers. So one of the reasons I'm going to open up the fortune cookie hotline tonight is I want to know if any of these things ever come true. I want to know how many of you really do pop these things, read them, and have they ever come true for you? That phone number, 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. The rest of you, of course, we've got open lines for you tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Oh, good thing Mark Hartzman didn't bet me that $100. We crashed his website. So if you're trying to get into it, you'll get in there eventually. This fast blast. And somebody says, George, I had a fortune cookie. I opened it. There was no fortune in there. What does that mean? Not a good thing. Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our wildcard line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Welcome to the show.
And, hi, George.
Yeah, hi. Welcome. Who are you? Where are you?
Hi, my name is Nicole. I'm calling from Farmington, Connecticut.
Well, welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm a first-time caller, so thank you for having me.
What finally got you to call?
Well, actually, I'm calling because I was listening to your topic that you were discussing last segment about circuses and sideshows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to your caller comment about the exploitation of, you know, the people that take part in these circuses and sideshows. And I thought it should be mentioned further about the exploitation of the animals.
That's a good point.
That take part, yeah, in these circuses and sideshows. You know, people aren't really aware of what it takes, the trainers, to motivate these animals to, you know, do these tricks. Like, you know, they see the bear on the tricycle, they think, oh, that's adorable, or they see the tiger jumping through, you know, the ring of fire. But what they don't know, what they don't see, is what happens behind the scenes. You know, how they're these poor animals are beaten. They're literally starved and deprived of water as a motivating force, you know, to get them to do these tricks.
Are you saying, Nicole, all of them are in this category or some of them?
You know what? I cannot generalize and I cannot say all of them, but, you know, there have been many, many accounts and, you know, documentation, say like on the Ringling Brothers. And of course they say, you know, oh no, that isn't true. You know, we take the best care of our animals. But, you know, there is documentation stating that there have been some accounts of animal abuse. And when you think about it, you know, these animals, they're exported from countries God knows where. They're also cargoed over here in the most inhumane conditions. And, you know, some people, hey, they just want to go to the show. They want to be entertained. But they don't necessarily know what goes on behind the scenes.
Well, that's because these animals always look happy.
Exactly. Exactly. And they put on a good show that way. But it's really sad. It's really sad. I mean, this is 2006. I mean, I don't know if a lot of your listeners have attended the Cirque du Soleil productions, but those are just amazing. And it's all people, all humans, and they do the most amazing tricks. And you know what? It's humane. No one's being hurt. No one is suffering.
True. Except they do work their tails off, don't they?
Oh, they do.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Nicole. Appreciate it.
Thank you
very much. I appreciate you bringing that to our forefront. Let's go to our fortune cookie line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
This is John from Newark, Delaware.
Hi, John. So tell me about your fortune cookie story.
Well, after eating at a Chinese restaurant, I wound up cracking open a fortune cookie, and it read something about receiving a good fortune. I can't remember the exact words, so
right.
I looked on the back of it. I memorized those numbers. I played those numbers for about 6 months every single week. Well, lo and behold, nothing ever happened. Well, about a month later, after I stopped playing those numbers, those exact numbers hit for about $50 million.
Oh, no.
You have no idea how upset I was.
God.
It was a Powerball number.
Oh.
And that's played in, what, 20 different states?
At least.
Like
maybe 26 states, something like that.
I still know those numbers by heart now. This has been about maybe a year or so ago, but you have no idea how upset I was.
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, what are the odds of probability that would happen and you'd get those numbers from a fortune cookie? Probably. Oh, my gosh. Into the millions. Huge numbers.
It was. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
For the rest of your life, you will think of this one.
Exactly. Absolutely.
I love it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Oh, one more month. That's all he had to go. $50 million. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. How you doing, George?
Good.
This evening.
Real well. Thanks.
Okay. Bless you and Art Bell and your entire staff.
Thank you.
George, I've got a story that I have never told on radio or television for the last 20 years, and it has to do with the Challenger. And it's a story that I wanted to disseminate to your listeners tonight and on your show because you have the best, most intelligent listening audience on the planet.
I would second that.
Okay. And not only that, the work that you're doing on this planet at this time warrants this particular story to be told after 20 years. What transpired on January the 27th, 1986, the day before the Challenger exploded, I was involved with a Catholic organization called Our Lady of the Roses, Mary Help of Mothers, and we were doing a lot of positive work at that time. In the afternoon, I was in Los Angeles at the time, I received a call from one of the members. They told me to go outside and look towards the west and come back in and tell them what I saw. I go outside and I look towards the west, and evidently a rocket had been launched from Vandenberg.
Ah, okay.
It had exploded in the air. And it had created the serpent's horn with the rockets breaking off to the right and to the left and creating a horn in the sky.
All right.
I knew then that there was going to be problems with the Challenger the following day. So I called I got back on the phone with the organization. They felt the same thing. And so we created a marathon of prayers starting at 6 p.m. that evening on the 27th. 2 a.m. in the morning, I'm in deep prayer. I'm on my bed. The room is dark. All of a sudden, I heard this electricity type of sound, this static type of sound. At the foot of my bed, a portal opened. It must have been about 6 feet tall. And as it widened, it was like blue in the background. And all of a sudden, I saw the torso of a reptilian form. And as it became brighter, this reptilian from the chest up, it was a dark brown leather type of skin, and what was very prominent that the eyes were liquid green. This entity said to me telepathically, it said, "I am Satan," says that you and your group are praying against me and what I am planning to do with the Challenger. And so I fought him during the night, and I made it very clear to him that the prayers that were offered up to our Father in Heaven would defeat whatever he had plans for the Challenger. And he showed me the astronauts, and he showed me three and then four. And he said four were his and three were not. And I said, "You will not win any souls of any of these astronauts." Around 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, I dozed off, and all of a sudden, something snatched my the steel bars off of my bedroom window, and it fell about a story down and fell on the car. As soon as that occurred, a relative came into my room and said, "Suleiman, the Challenger just exploded."
Oh, my God.
Exactly. Now, if you and your listeners look at the explosion of the Challenger as it is taking off in 73 seconds after it's in the air, when it explodes, the two auxiliary rockets on the side of the Challenger breaks off, and it creates the horn of the satanic horn. You will actually see it. But what Satan told me that night, he says, to validate that I am responsible for the destruction of the Challenger. He said 1 year from that date, on January the 28th, 1986, he says, I am going to cause a toxic spill from a toxic plant in Europe that is going to poison the waters and kill tens of millions over a decade. He says the governments will never tell them. Well, on that day, January the 28th, 1987, I sat in front of the television, and a major news story in regards to a toxic chemical plant exploding and spewing these toxic chemicals into the waters in Europe existed. And your listeners can go to a computer and to see if, in fact, that happens. And the reason why I'm calling to tell you this story is that the story that you came up with earlier in your broadcast about the priest in Rome.
Yes.
Yeah, that is going to go on trial because of
he believes in Jesus.
Exactly right. I want everyone out there to know that Satan is real. He's a reptilian. He has great intelligence, and he has the deepest hate for humanity that you can ever acquire. But on the other hand,
well, why did he win with the Challenger?
You know what I was told was that there was not enough prayers on the planet at that time from good people to prevent that particular disaster. And the other reason is why he destroyed that crew. It was an international crew. You had women, you had a black professor who was a laser specialist, you had the Asian that was from Hawaii, you had a mixed crew, and it was showing how humanity was coming together to conquer space.
Do you think had every person on this planet prayed, they might have beaten him?
I not only would they have beaten him, this demon would not be at the point right now where he is getting ready to cause this conflagration in the Middle East. But one thing I wanted to tell you, too, George, and for all you listeners out there that believe in God and Jesus Christ and Holy Spirit, and, George, I hope I have another time to tell you this story. In 1990...
Well, not tonight, because
I know, I know, not tonight, but in 1990, George, I had a visitation from the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ, and it lasted for about 3 hours, and the information that was given is going to benefit mankind, and I want everybody out there to know that there's a Father, a Son, and the Holy Spirit, and there are more good people on this planet than bad, and we can win the battle. And, George, this is Suleiman from Vancouver. May God bless you.
All right. I'll tell you what, he has made some predictions in the past before, and they are pretty startling and pretty uncanny. And I do not believe he's a professional psychic. These are just events that come to him. They just happen. And every once in a while, he pops up on the show, and he just tells us. Well, we'll be back in a second, but I do want to give you that phone number again for our Fortune Cookie Hotline tonight, which is 818-817-0021. You can email me anytime you want at george@coasttocoastam.com. Interesting response I got from one of our listeners tonight. He said, my God, you actually emailed me back. Yes, I do that sometimes. Yep, I'm real. I'm here. So we'll be right back with you. We'll continue with Open Lines here on Coast to Coast AM. And the Fortune Cookie Hotline is 818-817-0021. Streamlink member at Coast Rider Sherry sent me this little piece of audio. She said, it made me chuckle. I want you to have a great Friday. I want you to listen to this little ditty.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid, we know what you are and what you want. Stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you're depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you're dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk to you.
All Okay, welcome back to Coast, and let's go to the Fortune Cookie Hotline. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jimmy from Arizona.
Hello, Jimmy.
I had a Fortune Cookie experience that came true instantly.
Oh, finally, we have one that works.
Yes, it definitely did. As a matter of fact, I'll never forget it.
What was it?
We were opening our Fortune Cookies, and of course, I never pay much attention to them, but I opened mine, and it said, kind of an odd thing, it said, you will soon be met with ingratitude.
You will soon be met with ingratitude.
And I thought, how weird. But I didn't think a lot of it. And I went up to pay when we were done with our meal. And I held out my money for the girl. She jerked it out of my hand. She rang up our purchase. She dropped the change on the counter and turned her back and walked away.
She was not having a good day, was she?
No thank you or anything. And my wife broke out laughing.
There it was, right? It was an instant fortune.
Yes, and all these stern-faced people thought we were nuts, but we really enjoyed ourselves. Oh, and we never went back there, by the way. But,
and that's the right way to do it. Thanks, Jimmy.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, they get instantaneous fortune cookie. Wildcard line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
George?
Yes?
Hi, George. Good evening. This is Desiree. How are you?
Hi, Desiree. How are you?
Good, good. I was listening to all your lovely programming on my phone. It was very cool.
Good.
I like that trick. I wanted to talk to you about your last segment with Mark.
Oh, with my interview with Mark Hartzman.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes, yes. And I live in Los Angeles now, and I used to live in Boston, and I used to work in a nightclub on Boylston Avenue behind Fenway Park. And like all buildings in Boston, they're all very big and old, and many little sort of businesses are adjacent to each other.
Right.
And the nightclub was notorious for being haunted, so everybody was terrified of the basement. Well, I was working there during the day, and the electric man came to read the meters. And I took him downstairs into this crazy labyrinth in the basement trying to find the meters. And I opened the door, one of those push doors that you just kind of push the bar and go into the room. And it was completely dark, so we fumbled for the light. And this is unbelievable, we found an abandoned medical supply room, is the only way I can describe it. And there were shelves and shelves and rows and like scientific drawers of like two-headed babies in jars.
Oh my God, and nobody had found this before?
No, and they were all labeled Harvard Medical School. So the only thing I could think of it was an abandoned sort of storage facility for medical.
For a long time ago.
And George, the Bostonian magazine or the Boston magazine, I can't remember which one it was, this was in March. And that October, I read an article. They had the top 10 horror stories from Boston. They were talking about the Boston Strangler.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And apparently in the 30s and 40s, the medical schools were notorious for stealing the dead bodies from the mental institutions and doing illegal. I don't know if they were stealing the people or the bodies. I can't remember.
I would guess it might be the bodies.
I hope so.
Yeah, I do too.
And they were doing illegal like autopsies and experimentation. And they were like wombs in jars with two babies, like conjoined babies, everything. It was the craziest thing. And there were skulls, bones, and then rows and rows of skulls. And some of the skulls had like abnormal foreheads, like malformed skulls.
Well, what did you do? Who did you tell after this?
Well, this is during the day. And when everybody came in at night, the like basic crew, the door crew, the managers, we all snuck down there to check it out. And so I have to say, George, and I'm not proud of this, but we stole a lot of
the things?
Yeah, like some skulls and things like that. But
why?
Stupid.
Yeah.
You know, you're young and you're stupid.
But nobody called the cops and said, hey, you got to come and check this place out.
They were completely covered in dust. It was just like this abandoned hole in the basement. It was just this labyrinth of rooms in this basement, and it was just this abandoned room.
Could have been hundreds of, could have, well, let's see, Harvard, the 1800s. It could have been 100 years old.
I have no idea. I have no idea, but my mother took the skulls away from me and buried them.
Well, let me tell you, Mom did a good thing there. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate you being on Coast to Coast. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there. Where are you calling from?
Hi, George.
Hi.
This is Scott from Menasha, Wisconsin.
Hey, Scott.
I had a very strange dream Monday night, and I've been listening to you for about a year now. My wife turned me on to your station.
Good lady.
Oh, yeah. And I thank you for getting me through at least 4 hours of my night driving. I dreamt I passed away.
You dreamt you passed away.
And I told my wife about this, that she's the only one I've told. And I dreamt that it started out that I knew I wasn't breathing, and I was waiting to go up. And I started to go up. I went through the clouds, and I went into like a waiting area, but I met Jesus Christ himself. He met me at the door, and it was really weird because I went into a room and he said, well, here, you have to fill out this. And it was kind of like a form for what could you have done better in your life?
Yeah.
What would you change? And I said, okay, could I meet, some people I know, my relatives? My father, a sister, and grandma. And, oh, sure. And I started to fill a form out. And the next thing, I was going into a room, and there was a lady in there, and I thought it was my sister. And of all the things, she rolled over, and it was my ex-wife. And we looked at one another like, what are you doing here? And my first thought was, okay, now who's taking care of the kids?
Now, let me ask you this. Is she dead in real life?
No.
Okay,
no.
So she's alive.
Yeah, and when I told my wife that, boy, did I get in trouble at that moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's when it becomes a nightmare.
But, this is the way it was, and I keep running this through my mind daily because I don't want to forget it.
Well, until you brought that part up, I was going to say, how do you know you really didn't die in your sleep and somehow you came back?
Well, there's a second part to this story, if you got time.
Yeah.
That was it. Just we looked at one another. And what are you doing here? And I thought, who's taking care of the kids? Then I was back in the room, with this form. What could you do better? What would you change? And all of a sudden I woke up because me and my wife basically worked third shift delivering papers all night.
Okay.
That was part one. And when I told her, she said, were you scared? And I said, no, actually, I kind of liked it. I was a little, relieved. Hey, this is the way I believe it is. Tuesday night, I was listening to you, and during one of your breaks, an ad came on, and it was about sleep apnea. My father had it, my brother has it, and my wife has said that she has nudged me at night because I quit breathing.
Oh, you got to get on one of those machines.
Yep, and then that's when I got scared, because when I heard the sleep apnea, I went back, and I thought, did the alarm clock pull me out of something? I don't know.
That's a good point. Do you wake up exhausted sometimes?
I wake up and I am, my body hurts. I have no energy.
You feel like you didn't even get any sleep.
Exactly.
Yeah, you should get that checked. They'll put you in one of these if you have time. They'll monitor you as you go to sleep. They'll put you in a room, and if you have it, they put one of these machines on you that kicks in if you stop breathing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have it. And now I never told my wife this second part, so she's out on the road too. She's going to be calling me the minute I hang up.
Sure she hears you right now.
Oh, I know she does, and she's going to be saying you are going to the doctor.
You got that right.
I thought it was a very beautiful dream. I liked it.
All right. And, well, except you're too young to go, so not yet.
Well, that must be why the alarm went off.
You got it. All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Be careful. Let's go to our fortune cookie hotline. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Margot.
Hi, Margot.
I'm in San Diego, and it's good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Margot.
I talked to you about Nostradamus, but I have something very fascinating about a fortune cookie that I got in my youth. It said, you're going to go far in medical research. Now, I thought, this is a very strange fortune cookie. You don't get things like that.
Not that explicit, no.
I am an internationally published researcher.
You are?
In medical research, and I am the number one, was the number one operative, undercover operative, with CDC to establish how HIV was transmitted. That's just one of the things. I also worked with Smart Cells in Davos, Switzerland.
Now, what do you mean you were undercover operative? What
well,
did you do?
Well, at that time, if you remember when HIV first came around, people were leaving the hospitals.
Yeah, it was coming around in New York, right?
And it was called the gay cancer, and the doctors didn't want to touch anyone, and EMTs didn't want to, and CDC needed to establish how it was transmitted. Was it transmitted by airborne, or was it bloodborne,
right,
or how?
Okay.
And they put together a team, of which I was one. 25% of my time was devoted to that. And in the nation, I was the number one. There was one individual that I was ethically unable to say, I know how this was transmitted, although I knew.
Getting back to your fortune cookie for a moment, Margo.
Yeah.
So was it that fortune that got you to go into medical research, or were you interested in that anyway?
No. I was interested in it anyway. My father was quite a renowned maxillofacial surgeon. But I just went into school, and I have a double postgraduate degree, doctoral candidate in clinical psychology, as well as a background in immunology.
Are you still doing this?
Unfortunately, 16 years ago, I woke up as a quad.
I couldn't hear you. What happened?
16 years ago, October 19, 1989, I woke up as quadriplegic overnight.
You mean you just...
I woke up
totally
as quad.
How did that happen?
MS, acute chronic demyelinating polyneuropathy, lupus, they have attacked my organs. I have lived 12 years past the norm.
Well, you keep going.
Well, I don't know why. I'm ready to go home.
Why?
But...
What do you mean you're ready to go home?
Well...
Not yet. You still probably are contributing a lot to everybody.
I don't know how. Everyone says that, but I really don't know
how. Well, first of all, you're a great caller to this show. This is, we'd miss you.
You do?
Yes.
Well, I don't call often because it's a once a month, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you can
on the hand.
You can wait every month, can't you?
I do, but sometimes it's very hard to push the numbers.
Are you telling me if we don't hear from you after another month or so that you have checked out on us?
No, it means you see, right now I don't feel my hands.
At all?
No, but I feel pressure. It's like I walk on stilts. I feel pressure at my thighs, you know, upper thighs.
How are you? How are you?
And... I walk from that pressure because I know there's ground.
How are you holding the phone now?
Leaning against a pillow. And sometimes I want to go on speaker, but I don't know if anyone hears me. And sometimes I'm too weak to dial. But I did call in on the Nostradamus. And remember I asked about the blue turban?
Yep, that was you.
That was me.
All right, Margo.
And guess what?
What?
I was cut off before I said Russia is going to provide the means for them. And unfortunately, they are going to study it because they don't have the technological know-how, but they will get it. And then we're in trouble.
All right. Good point. Thanks, Margo. You take care. Sweet person. East of the Rockies, we have time for you. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Brooke. I'm calling from Newport, Rhode Island.
Hi, Brooke.
How are you?
Good. I'm well.
My condolences to Art.
Thank you.
I'm the guy that was born on June 4th.
Just like me.
In Detroit.
Yep. Okay.
And I'm calling with some comments regarding your psychics.
Okay.
Last night you had a lady on who discussed Jimmy Hoffa. And in growing up in Detroit, my grandparents lived around the corner from Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, really?
Yes. Which was just north of 7 Mile Road. I believe the street was Gallagher, and it was between East Grand Boulevard and 7 Mile Road.
That's right. And then he ended up moving into Oakland County somewhere.
Well, my grandparents remembered him when he lived on Gallagher.
Okay.
And it was interesting that your psychic felt that he would not be found because his body parts were scattered. And I tend to agree that she's correct.
I do, too.
Oddly enough. The other thing was your previous caller in the last hour, Suleiman. He sounds like a very interesting guy, and I've often wondered why you haven't had him on as a guest.
I don't have his number. I guess if he's listening, he can email it to me.
Well, he's called in a few times, and I've heard him, and he's
He calls in every once in a while. He'll get in. That's right.
And the other thing was Dr. Lewis Turry, who I think is absolutely amazing.
He is. And frightening at the same time.
Yes, there were. What's frightening is he made a couple of predictions on dates that nobody's called into you about that I noticed that are rather stunning. The first one is December 19th. Dr. Turry said that George Bush would do something on December 19th that would come to haunt him. And on December 19th, George Bush announced this business of spying on American people, which I thought was very interesting.
Absolutely. Well, it's time, the top of the hour. Man, this is a fast night. Where is it going? Let me open up another Chinese fortune cookie, by the way. It's the last one I have. It says, you outdistance all competitors. Ha! That one's right. I'll be back.